It allows us to go along for the ride. It allows us to suspend our disbelief, and it allows us to examine our own deeply held issues, beliefs, and thoughts because we've seen them reflected on the stage.
Hi, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast, where we interview cutting-edge creative artists, entrepreneurs, and innovators who are changing the world. We also bring you tips and techniques that you can implement. This episode is brought to you by my favorite productivity hack, the Brain FM app, this podcast's host, Podbean, as well as my book, Speak From Within.
Hey there, and welcome to the Creative Solutions Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. Today is another bonus episode on lessons I'm learning from theater. Last night, I went to see Agatha Christie's The Hollow at the Players Theater in New York City on McDougal Street. Now, it's a very, very short run. So if you listen to this tonight and you want to go see it because it closes April 21st. But I wanted to talk about something I learned that was really interesting. First of all, who doesn't love a good whodunit? And I love Agatha Christie so very much. The ABC Murders and Halloween Party and Murder of Roger Ackroyd and just so many books that I adored growing up. And I've written mysteries in part because I love Agatha Christie. And her plays, And Then There Were None, or I think the play is actually called 10 Little Indians. And The Mousetrap are two of my favorite plays. And The Hollow is another play. Is it as wonderful, the play itself, as some of her other plays? I personally don't think so. But that's not to say that you might not like it if you go see it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the space. The Players Theater is a 174-seat theater. It's a long, it looks kind of like a train car. It's long, and the stage is also narrow, but you're nicely raised so people are not in your way, which, you know, if you've listened to me talk about anything, you've heard me say that very thing, that I can't stand when people's heads and hats are right in front of me. Anyway, but one of the things that I learned as far as communication and as far as how we interact is, and this is crucial, is when you're doing theater, you are essentially asking your audience to go along on the ride with you. You are asking them to believe that when Peter Pan flies, held up by wires, that Peter Pan is actually flying. You're asking them to believe the same thing when Elphaba does it in Wicked. When you're showing somebody murdered, like on television or movies, you're asking your audience to believe that it's true. We suspend our disbelief and we go along for the ride. And whatever staging you're doing, it's a similar kind of thing to the plot, right? The plots of plays aren't always realistic. We know this. But we go in and we go, yes, this is what's going to happen. You look at Chekhov, for example, Anton Chekhov. You look at his plays, and these people are all living lives of quiet desperation, silent like a mouse, but desperate and full of passion on the inside. And we go, okay, yeah, I know that. That's not hard to believe because many of us have lived that. Many of us have lived lives where we don't get to do the things we want to do. In fact, most of us are doing a lot of things we don't want to do. If I had my druthers, I would be always toes in some ocean drinking some version of a Mai Tai or Pina Colada, or nowadays a virgin colada, since Rich and I have given up drinking for the foreseeable future. And it's funny, I'm going to diverge for a second, go off on a tangent. I was told by a doctor, and I don't know if you know this about me, I tend to drink when I'm on vacation. Like if I go to Key West, I will absolutely have a pina colada or a Miami Vice. But it's not like I drink 14 of them. I will have one on my vacation, maybe two. And the rest of the time, I don't tend to drink at all. And this is one of these human condition things where you go, genetically, I have a predisposition for issues with alcohol. It makes me woozy. It didn't used to, but apparently now it does. Anyway, What's interesting about all of this is that, as I said, I don't really drink. And I remember one time I was going home. I was coming home from a gig on New Year's Eve. And I'm driving home and they have one of those stops, you know, where they stop you and they go, okay, we need to ask you questions and we need to do a breathalyzer and all this other stuff. And those. So I stop for the cop and he goes, ma'am, how long ago was your last drink? And I went, I think it was maybe a glass of wine at Thanksgiving. And he said, what? That was your last drink, was back in Thanksgiving? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. And he looked at me and he said, you haven't been drinking? No, I'm coming home from work. So your last drink was Thanksgiving. Yeah. And he goes, move along, ma'am. You're not our demographic. And I said, no, I'm really not your demographic. I really don't tend to drink. And in fact, a friend of mine, Kendall, gave me for my bachelorette party back in 2004, she gave me a bottle of Silver Patron tequila. And that bottle moved with us unopened to New York City from Maryland in 2019. And then Rich ended up drinking it over time. I never had any of that tequila. That's how little I tend to drink nowadays. And so here's what's interesting about all of this. When you are in a situation where you make the choice to do this, that's one thing. I've chosen, I don't really drink for the foreseeable future. Maybe when Rich and I go to Ecuador this summer, if there's a local drink, I might have one. But otherwise, I've chosen that this is not what I'm going to do. Well, when the doctor said to me, you know, you have a genetic predisposition to have issues with alcohol, maybe don't drink for a while and let's see what happens. And I went, well, you know, I really don't drink. The last drink I had, she told me this last June, and the last drink I had had was the previous January. So, again, I don't drink very much. But as soon as she said it, do you know the only thing I wanted to do was go out somewhere and have a piña colada. That is the human condition. Immediately upon being told, you know what, let's not drink for a little while and see if we can improve your numbers. And immediately, I wanted to have a drink. How weird is that? Oh, my cat, my very snoofly cat is right here. You might hear him. Okay, I'm hoping that he is done snoofling. Maybe not. Anyway, so that is the human condition, that until she said, don't drink for a little while. And you know what's really interesting? It's not that I'd been drinking. It's that I needed to start eating oatmeal. And as soon as I started eating oatmeal, my numbers improved. It was very odd because the alcohol, because I told her, I said, the last drink was in January. She's like, well, it's genetic. Great. Why am I telling you all this? It's just interesting to me that the human condition does that to us. It goes, you know what? As soon as you're being told you shouldn't do something, you want to do it. And as soon as you're told you should do something, there's a part of you that goes, no, I don't. And you have to get around that. I don't know if it's hereditary, or I don't know if it's genetic, I don't know if it's subconscious, but we have to get around that immediate drive to do the exact opposite. And it's kind of that way when you're going to a show. And I knew I'd bring it around again. When you are going to a show, there is a moment at which your body and your mind and your spirit and everything else has to go, this won't be real, and that is okay. And we accept it now as rote, but imagine theater back in the ancient Greek times. Imagine them doing theater then, and it was such a spectacle because it was new. Just imagine people talking around things around a fire, for example. In ancient times, they would tell us origin stories. They would tell why the people are here. They would tell about the stars in the sky, and they would tell about why the sun comes up and goes down. And sometimes, like the eclipse a couple weeks ago, that was all about why does the sun disappear in the daytime sometimes. There are all of these things that we immediately have to accept, and these explanations let us know this stuff. And the theater does that. The theater allows us to explore the human condition. So in watching The Hollow, I did that. It explores the human condition. It explores love, especially when What happens when you love someone who just doesn't love you back? What do you do then? How do you deal with your life? And do you, are you able to make it different or better for yourself if you have to accept that someone just doesn't love you back? Or if you're the person who's loved and you have to let someone else down easy. So these are all the things that theater asks us on a very personal, intimate level to explore inside ourselves and to expand enough to accept it on stage. Now imagine if you are going through that, if you are deeply in love with someone who just doesn't love you back, and suddenly you see a show, and that's the theme, that's one of the subject matters of the play, and worst comes to worst, what if you are there with someone, with the person you love desperately, who just doesn't love you back? I don't know if you've ever done this. I used to be the best friend. I'd have a lot of guys say words to me along the lines of, "Oh, Isolde, you're so amazing. Why can't I find someone just like you?" And I'd be like, "Hello, I'm right here. You don't need to find someone just like me. You can have me." And this happened with a number of men that I was in love with in high school and college until I met my husband, and we've been together 30 some odd years, blah, blah, blah. Shout out, Rich. Anyway, but the point is that that notion of being the best friend, being that person, and we see it in theater, and then we have to sort of accept that our lives are mirrored by that. And a good director will let you share in those emotions and will let you share in how you deal with it, but also being witness to how the characters deal with it, and let those characters and their actions and their thoughts inform perhaps how you feel about yourself. And I'm not trying to meander in this episode, but it is something that I find fascinating about theater, is how often it gets into the nitty-gritty of who we are and what we can expect from ourselves and each other when it comes to some of these grand themes. A play that does not address, or any entertainment that does not address some grand theme, is going to leave you feeling a little flat. And it's interesting, I just read the New York Times article review of Suffs, which yesterday's episode was all about that. I'm seeing a lot of theater, what can I say? And it said that a lot of times, in a lot of situations in Suffs, it felt more like an educational piece than a musical, than an entertainment piece. And I went, you know what? I need to look and see who wrote this review. I'll bet it was a man. And sure enough, it was a man. Or at the very least, this person's pronouns appear to be he and him. And so I'm reading this review and I'm going, you didn't get it. And I went, I wonder if you didn't get the poignancy, the profundity of what's happening on stage in front of you, in part because on some level, you've always been part of the dominant sector of society. And I don't know. I don't know anything about this reviewer, but I'm willing to bet that that's part of this, that he didn't get it. And I wonder if there had been a different reviewer at that show, if I had reviewed the show for the Times. Hey, New York Times, if you want me to do some show reviews for you, you know where to find me. But if there had been someone else who did the review, because reviewers can make or break a show. Really important reviewers, whether it's book reviewers, and the Times, of course, is sort of the gold standard. Book reviewers, musical reviewers, movie reviewers, they can make or break these artistic endeavors. And so when I read that, I went, you didn't understand what was in front of you. If you had understood what was in front of you, you wouldn't have written that it was an educational piece. Theater educates. It does. It always does. It shines the light on things sometimes we don't want to look at. And it lets us know who we are as a reflection of what happens on stage. And the fact that this reviewer did not understand that this struggle was being lifted up and highlighted at a time when it's so important for this struggle to be lifted up and highlighted. And I watched a little clip at the end of the last night was the opening, and I saw it the previous night, but last night was the opening, and Shayna Taub was talking to the audience, and she said, you know, one of the things that I'm so grateful for is everybody who's been involved, and these are all our friends and family who are in the audience tonight, but if you take nothing else away from this show, this performance, remember, register to vote, go out in November and vote. And I went, yeah, because that struggle is so real. When I got my first checking account when I was, I think, 12 years old, back in the 70s, I never knew that a woman could not have her own credit card until 1974. She was not allowed. Can you imagine? A woman who wanted a credit card was not allowed to have her own credit card that was not attached to her husband's until 1974. Wow. So that's why theater acts as a light, as a reflector of the rest of society. So in Suffs, it's that. In The Hollow, it's about love, and it's about, in some ways, obsession. But the other thing that it's about in the staging of the show is that suspension of disbelief. And here's the long and winding road to this. I suspend my disbelief in this situation. Remember how I told you the theater is pretty narrow and the stage is very narrow. And the way they had it set up, it's sort of a living area. And there are these sort of French doors that open out onto a veranda behind us that we can't see upstage. And presumably gardens and the landscape outside this estate. And one of the things that the characters had to do is they had to come and go outside, always from the same place. And there was one door stage left, but they almost never used it. And it went into other parts of the house. It did not go outside. And so when the characters had to go outside and not see each other, in some situations, the character would go upstage and turn left. And in other situations, they'd go upstage and turn right. But they would literally be one in front of the other. They would see each other because one was leaving a scene and one was entering the scene. But they acted like they didn't see each other, and we went along for the ride because we needed to have the suspension of disbelief that somehow one could leave and one could come in literally at the same time, but not know that the other had done it. And that's part of the mystery. That's part of the actual play. And in a different staging situation, they'd be able to show that. There might be a different, more opportunity for doors, things like that. But in this one, there wasn't. And so the director had to make a choice. How do I set this up so that people just believe that this happens? And what the director had the actors do is just ignore the other person. They would walk in and walk out and not, quote unquote, see each other. And that was it. I went, okay. And when there's a murder, and you know this because it's a murder mystery, when the person who is murdered, how we know they see their murderer before they are murdered is that they turn to in the same direction, right? They turn in the direction the other person is coming from. And then we know that they saw the person who's murdered them, and the gun shoots and the person dies. And so I just thought that was so interesting that you look one way and go one way and you just don't see that person. Even though they are literally standing in front of you, you just don't see them. And we went along for the ride. We were like, sure, that's great. I get it. That's what we're going to do. All is well. And that's what theater allows us to do. It allows us to go along for the ride. It allows us to suspend our disbelief, and it allows us to examine our own deeply held issues, beliefs, and thoughts because we've seen them reflected on the stage. And I love that. I love that about theater because it's so intimate and it's so effective at getting us to do that very thing. Alrighty, The Hollow is playing through April 21st at the Players Theater in New York City if you want to go see it. I hope you enjoyed today's shorter episode. Actually, it's not that short. Oh my goodness, I didn't realize I had talked quite as long, but I don't edit, so you're going to get my thoughts on this, or you have gotten my thoughts on this, if you're listening still, then you've already listened to all of this. And every new show that I see, I'm going to talk about how the human condition and also our ability to communicate and create is in relationship with what theater is doing. Until next time, this is Isolde Trachtenberg for the Creative Solutions Podcast. reminding you as always to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind.
Thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the show if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2024. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope.